Every year in America, a quarter of a million women have their lives changed by a diagnosis of breast cancer. And for some, it's an unfortunate legacy of family. They also have a mother, an aunt, or a sister who battled the disease. And that's because women who inherit a mutation in a gene called BRCA are especially susceptible. Genetic testing can detect the mutation, but it raises some difficult personal questions. Who should be tested, and when, and what do you do if you have the mutation? The choices are equally difficult. One choice is preventive mastectomy. That's the removal of both breasts before any sign of cancer appears. It seems radical, but a study out in this week's Journal of Clinical Oncology shows that it works for women with a genetic predisposition for the disease. Double mastectomy cuts the risk of breast cancer by 99%. So we're going to start this hour by talking about this choice of mastectomy for reducing the risk of breast cancer. Our number 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Barbara Weber is a professor of medicine and genetics and the director of the Breast Cancer Center at Abramson Cancer Center of the University of Pennsylvania. She led the study on mastectomy that was published this week, and she joins us today from Philadelphia. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Weber.
Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. Laura Edel is a pharmacist and a mother of two and a member of the study. She chose to undergo preventive mastectomy in 1997. She joins us from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Dr. Edel.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Jerome Groopman is a physician and the author of The Anatomy of Hope, How People Prevail in the Face of Illness, published by Random House. He's the Dina and Raphael Recanati Chair of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and the Chief of Experimental Medicine at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. He joins us from WBUR. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Groopman.
Thank you, Ira. It's a pleasure.
Nice to talk to you again. Barbara Weber, tell us about the study, who these patients were, how they were selected.
All of the patients on the study are women who have BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutations in the gene that you referred to earlier that very, very markedly increases their risk of developing breast cancer. And 100 of the women in the study had actually chosen to have both of their breasts removed as a preventative measure. Another approximately 400 women in the study chose to be followed by standard screening methods.
Mm-hmm. And these genes increase your risk by how much?
Quite a bit. The overall lifetime risk of developing breast cancer if you have one of these two gene mutations is in the range of 60% to 80%.
Wow, that is a lot. Dr. Edel, why did you decide on a mastectomy in the absence of breast cancer?
I think when you looked at my family history and unfortunately watching my mother, both her sisters and their mother all pass away in their late 40s, 50 being the oldest, my feeling was once I found out that I carried the same gene as my mother did, the way not to get sick and not to die from breast cancer was to have prophylactic surgery.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any scientific information besides your gut feeling on it?
At the time I did the surgery, I did not. I honestly felt that it was going to make a difference. I know that there's a big discussion and argument even today. The study really helps validate that. But the argument is if you leave any breast tissue at all, there's still a chance that you could develop breast cancer because the mutation is in all cells. So there was no real good scientific data at that time, just your gut feeling that at least I have done everything possible to prevent cancer. And my feeling was I was going to get it. Every woman in my family had gotten it, and every woman in my family had passed away from it. And so the way not to get sick was to do prophylactic surgery.
And so you feel that this study published this week backs up your intuition on that?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And, you know, it confirms what we thought. And even a lot of women that discuss this at the time all are comfortable, most comfortable, feeling that you're making the best decision you can at the time you choose to do that. And we knew that was a risk. But luckily, the data supported that in Dr. Weber's study.
Dr. Weber, do you think now this is going to be more accepted by more women?
Well, our view has always been and remains that this is a very personal choice that each woman has to make for herself. What we sought to do really was to answer the questions that you're hearing raised now for those women who decide it's the right choice for them. Does it really work? We also felt that it would, but we really needed a strong scientific study to back that up, again, for the reasons you've just heard explained very well.
Mm-hmm. I agree with Dr. Weber that I think the women that are going to consider this, I honestly don't know if the study will change that. The women that are thinking about this are probably results would, it would have changed it if it would have been negative.
Yeah.
But I think that the women that are contemplating this, a lot of times when they go into genetic testing, I don't think you're going to see a drastic increase in it. And I think you guys talked about the personal choice, and I think that's a real important thing, that this decision is very personal, and it's really for, you know, it's very individual. You have to look at your own family and your own situation.
Dr. Gropman, you've written about this and have patients of your own with the very same situation. Tell us what you told them when they asked you what they should do.
Well, I didn't have the benefit of these kinds of data, and I think the study is a very, very important one. I wrote a piece for the New Yorker magazine called Decoding Destiny, which wrestled with this issue. A young woman named Karen Belts, who had BRCA mutation. And at the time, this is now 4 years ago, I really didn't have a strong scientific foundation upon which to stand to make a recommendation. And I basically tried to impose my intuition on her, which was a mistake, because as both the speakers said today, Dr. Weber and Dr. Dell, that this is still, of course, a very personal choice. But on the other hand, I would differ a little in what they said, because my tentativeness and my uncertainty and my inability to marshal data made it more difficult for the patient. Ultimately, she chose to have a preventive mastectomy for the very reasons that Dr. Edel did, and that was her choice was informed by personal experience, by seeing what had happened to women in her own family and actually observing what was happening with her sister. But I think that as oncologists, we can make a stronger case now for saving a woman's life with this kind of intervention.
Dr. Weber, you mentioned in your study that the success rate was well over 90% in this study.
That's right.
But there were two women who had the double mastectomy and got breast cancer. How is that possible?
Well, in one case, I think it's pretty clear from the history that the breast cancer was probably already present in the breast and had moved to the lymph nodes under the arm of that patient. And so removing the breast, unfortunately, happened a little too late. Now, that's not to say that that could have been avoided, because that woman chose the surgery at age 28, which is really quite early. It's only to say that, unfortunately, for her, it was too late. In the other case, I think the reason is also pretty clear that the surgery that was performed was insufficient. There was quite a bit of breast tissue left behind, and in fact, a quite a large cancer developed in the tissue that was remaining that was obvious at the time that breast cancer was then removed.
Would we call that a botched surgery?
Well, not botched, not at all. It was just that, again, people didn't understand early on what was the right thing to do, and so surgeons often chose to do a procedure called a subcutaneous mastectomy, hoping to improve the cosmetic result, but as a result, not removing probably enough tissue to be an effective preventive procedure.
So is what's quite a radical mastectomy here?
No, it's actually called a total mastectomy or a simple mastectomy, although as surgeons tell me, they don't like to call it simple because they don't want people to think what they do is simple. But it's the removal of the breast and the skin of the breast and the nipple. Now, there is a newer procedure than that that does preserve the skin while removing almost all of the breast tissue, and that's probably the most preferred approach at this point.
What's that called?
That's called a skin-sparing mastectomy, and that's different from a subcutaneous mastectomy.
Dr. Gropman, as we get better at diagnosing these genes, are we going to be faced with more of these ethical questions?
I think so. Many, many women who have a family history, a very strong family history, of other members having breast cancer, particularly breast cancer at an early age, test negative for the BRCA genes. So the conundrum there is, do we use the data, the very compelling data, from Dr. Weber's study or other studies that have been published and extrapolate, or are we back in the quandary of thinking that each gene might have a different clinical consequence may not be captured entirely by this kind of approach. My own prejudice, my own intuition, is that mastectomy will help these women, but we have, again, less of a scientific basis for that recommendation.
Let's go to the phones. Norm in St. Paul. Hi, Norm.
Yes, I'm very curious, very much interested in how the issue of insurability plays into all of this. I could imagine that there are a lot of women who probably don't want to find out if they carry a gene for any kind of cancer, and I'd like to hear your comments about that.
Okay. What about if this gene turns up, will insurance pay for this preemptive strike here?
Well, I think that there's two questions that are raised here. The first, the answer to that question is that, in fact, the huge majority of women who are being tested now are submitting this to their insurance companies, and the coverage varies depending on the plan and the situation. Most insurance companies now have a sort of an algorithm to decide based on what's the likelihood that a mutation will be found in that person, whether or not they will pay. The issue of insurability for health insurance coverage once a mutation has been identified has been something people have always worried about and has not been an issue. And I really want to stress that because I think it's we haven't talked about ovarian cancer risk, and that's another important component of these gene mutations. But women should not be afraid to get this test for fear of losing their health insurance. There's legislation in many states. There's federal legislation that protects against that. There's an executive order for federal employees. And really, there is a strong precedent now that's been set with almost 10 years of genetic testing that this is not being used by health insurance coverage to make decisions about insurability.
I agree. I've never seen or felt any discrimination or been afraid to reveal that information. And, I mean, I think that you can't allow something like that to avoid doing something that you think may save your life in the future.
Well, Dr. Edel, seeing that how this is a family gene, do other women members of your families have the same? Have they chosen the same route that you have?
Some have and some have not. I have a cousin who is the same age as I am, and around the same month, our mothers were sisters, chose to have prophylactic surgery. I have a sister who's 40 who lives on the West Coast who has been tested but has chosen at this point not to have surgery. And I think that brings an important point up that you have to look at your life situation and, you know, it's not the right answer for everyone. And in my situation, I'd had my children. My husband was very supportive, and my goal was to be here to watch my children grow up. For people that are single, for people that cannot contemplate having this type of surgery, I think monitoring and being carefully undergoing surveillance is very adequate. So I think that, you know, you have to look at each individual factor.
I have about a minute left before we have to take a break. Dr. Weber, is there any age where women should be tested to make sure that and they should have the surgery?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to the issue of ovarian cancer, because although we feel strongly that the choice towards mastectomy is quite individual, these women are at very high risk of getting ovarian cancer as well, and screening really isn't an option for that. So we encourage women to be tested around by the time they've finished having children, so if they are positive, they can have their ovaries removed, which we feel is really mandatory, unlike removing the breast, which is an individual choice.
Is there some age where you should make that decision about removing them or not and having it done?
We think it should be done once people have had their children. We certainly don't feel that people need to change their lives because of that. But once they are sure they've had their family, then they should have their ovaries removed.
Well, I want to thank you and Dr. Edel for joining us this hour. Barbara Weber is professor of medicine and genetics and director of the Breast Cancer Center at the Abramson Cancer Center, University of Pennsylvania. She led the study on mastectomy that was published this week. Laura Edel, a pharmacist and a mother of two and a member of the study. Thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a short break, come back, and talk lots more with Dr. Groopman about his book, The Anatomy of Hope, How People Prevail in the Face of Illness. Stay with us. We'll be right back.